From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes Podcast for Friday, May 13th.
Extend taxes
for
kids.
No more cuts.
Extend taxes
for
kids.
No more cuts.
That protesting, that chanting is over comments Anthony York made on the podcast.
No doubt.
Just recently.
You should see outside my house.
They follow you. Yeah. They know where you are.
Yeah.
Those teachers, man.
I know. They're persistent.
They're persistent. They'll find you. Of course, that was protesting outside of the state capitol this week, the state of emergency week, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Anthony York from the LA Times is always over here with iced coffee for this beautiful afternoon.
Like Hunter Thompson and his iced tea. It was actually wild turkey.
A, I had to remember the reference. B, I had to think about what was actually in your cup, so it took a moment. So, yeah, Friday the 13th. Don't look out for the black cats. Don't walk under ladders.
And don't release your revised budget, apparently.
Do you think it has anything to do with it being Friday the 13th,
yes,
that we don't get it on Friday?
Yes.
No,
I mean,
you don't. Do you really?
Yes.
Okay.
I think there was – or they wanted an extra weekend to finish their homework. I'm not sure which, but they, constitutionally, I believe it has to be out by the 15th, right? And the governor asked for an extension. I don't know if it's constitutional.
How do you ask the Constitution for an extension?
I don't know if it's a maybe not constitutionally, statutorily. It's supposed to be by the 15th, but there was some sort of information process with the legislature. Let's move on. We're not starting off
I like that.
On firm, footing.
I just enjoyed the Friday the 13th segue into the state budget. So, yeah, Governor Brown's revised budget plan next week, which will be oh so exciting for the podcast.
Numbers galore.
Yeah. This week I thought maybe we'd talk about the protests, taxes, and Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell.
We'll get there. It all goes back to the state budget, of course. The teachers were here this week, education groups led primarily by the California Teachers Association, a few others, the state of emergency week of events protesting possible new education cuts, public school cuts, all across the state, but obviously the Capitol was the focus. Monday, a big event, a few dozen people arrested Monday night when they didn't leave the Capitol on time, something like that.
Yeah. A
few other protests. I didn't really think the protests were that big after that, but that doesn't mean they weren't real. There was another big rally in the Rotunda on Wednesday. All of this, of course, getting to what the budget solution is going to be, the governor's plan for tax extensions, Republicans.
Is that where Tinkerbell comes in?
Yeah.
Okay.
You remember now?
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
It's good.
Now I get it.
Taxes,
you.
Tinkerbell. I had a path on this podcast, which may not be a good idea. But the whole protest, of course, revolving around whose budget plan is going to move forward, what parts of the budget, tax extensions, not cuts, it on and on and on. And then just obviously recapping the main points of the week. The Republicans in the Assembly put out a budget plan Thursday morning, a framework, I think it's better to call it, a blueprint. It's not a detailed bill-by-bill plan on how you do it. And we'll talk about that. And then, of course, we're rolling into the and then some more maneuvering, I think, with the political world about the budget. So as we end the week, maybe let's do this. As we end the week, what seems most significant to you? I mean, I think the Republican document from a policy perspective, it raises some questions. But if you take the teachers and the education groups on one side and you put the Republican assembly members on the other side of the political spectrum about the fight, is it kind of zero sum? I mean, does anybody end the week up? I mean, the teachers got days of press. What do you think?
Right. I don't know.
Excellent. Is a Hunter Thompson
kind of
iced tea. Yes, go
no,
ahead.
I think, a couple of things. Number one, on the Republican plan, they tried to, in their words, they're protecting education and keeping education whole and trying to sort of do, I think, what you saw the legislative Democrats do last year is try to reframe their position in language that's favorable to the other side, right? Last year, you saw the Democrats in the legislature talking about the jobs budget and that jobs are normally associated with the focus of the Republican plan. The Assembly of Republicans this time tried to frame this as a budget that protects education, which is Democratic language,
and,
right?
And I mean, and that is probably the centerpiece of their plan, which
right.
is the unexpected tax revenue, which is about $2.5 billion. use $2 billion of that to swap out the governor's taxes for schools and the other $500 million for local public safety and say, right, we care about education and public safety first.
I thought you were going to use the $2 billion for the redevelopment plan.
Oh, there's a lot more in there that I'll talk about in a moment.
And the enterprise zone plan. But yeah, no? Single sales factor? No? How many times are we going to spend this $2 billion? We'll get to that, I'm sure.
Go for it now.
No, but one thing, I just think politically what was interesting about the Republican plan was them about this education thing is putting down a marker. I mean, look, Prop 25 has taken away a lot of the leverage points for Republicans, right? You can now call any bill a budget bill, appropriate $1,000, call it a budget bill, and you can pass it with a simple majority. Court cases to follow, I'm sure. But point being that voters in November took away a lot of power for Republicans. But you still would need – I think what the Assembly Republicans were saying is one way or another, you're going to need to do this budget by two-thirds. Either it's going to have taxes, which will require a two-thirds vote to extend these taxes with or without an election. We can – discuss that in detail next week, or to suspend Proposition 98. You're gonna need two-thirds votes. And the Republicans put down their marker in the Assembly today saying, we're not going to do this. And so you're not going to be able to even have a majority vote budget plan because your majority vote plan would require suspending Prop 98. And so, how that plays out and how close the – I mean, look, this is not going to be – What the final budget looks like, I don't think the plan that was unveiled this week. But I think it's a part of what you're seeing is a struggle for Republicans to remain relevant as this conversation goes on.
Well, let's switch to the teachers for a moment, with the premise that education, really, I would argue, and K through 12 education, at the focus of a lot of the news about the budget this week, because that was the Assembly Republican news at the beginning of the week, where Leader Connie Conway from Tulare, said, let's give the extra money to schools. That started off the week. And then I think it still is, in a lot of ways, the centerpiece of maybe what they want to argue in addition to the no taxes. And then the teachers who were here and their events, a lot of debate as to whether those events made a difference or not, and whether they either get the public's attention, legislature's attention. I'm not really sure that they swayed legislative minds. I could be wrong. We'll see if there's some rank-and-file Republicans, because they are advocating for the governor's plan, the governor's tax extensions. They want the five-year $11 billion. It's actually more, but $11 billion that would be on the ballot, tax extension plan.
But here's one thing they don't want. They don't want an election. And they don't want an election in the fall, and you're hearing a lot of this now from
right. They just want the Republicans to pass
leadership.
The taxes, right?
Right, right. And they especially don't want they say an election in the fall would be too unsettling because they've already budgeted for the school year. The school year will have already started by then, and so you can't really have an election. And if those revenues are up in the air, then and they could go away in the fall, then we're going to have to plan for the worst case scenario and lay off these 20,000 teachers who've been pink slipped. So if you're going to have an election, starting to hear some of this now, if you're going to have an election, let's have it in June of next year. I mean, I'm starting to hear some of that. I even heard November of next year, some people talking about.
How do you do that, though? I mean, how do you budget with that?
Well, you budget for it by having the revenues on the books for the year. And then if you have a June election, they don't come off until the end of the fiscal year.
So in effect, you are asking Republicans to go up on taxes that are more than a temporary. I mean, they're going to argue it's a temporary thing pending a voter approval. But after they've been on the year on the books for almost a year.
Well, and this gets at the heart of a question that I asked the governor in Santa Clarita a couple of weeks ago. I guess that's about a month ago now.
About the last time we saw him, yeah.
Yeah. He's already said that he would agree to a budget. His budget is going to assume that the taxes stay on the books July 1st. There will have not been an election by then, right? So he is going to assume that for some period of time, these revenues be extended without a vote of the people. Okay, so we take the governor at his word that that's what he's pushing for. But the question then becomes, how long? Are we talking about the fall? Would he agree to a June election? Would he agree to a November 2012 election? How long then, once you start you know, playing this game of you know, within a reasonable time frame, I think was the way he answered the question I asked.
See, and I understand now because I confess, when you asked him the question, you said June. I thought you were talking about this June. You're talking about next June.
No, I was talking about next June.
Oh, okay. Now,
and he said, I think we'll have to go back and listen to the audio. I'm sure your audio is better than mine. But he said something along the lines of, I'd want a more reasonable or something more, you know, I can't remember exactly how he said, but it was a hedge. It was a hedge and it was noncommittal. Yeah. And I think that those questions are going to be very important. And we'll see what he comes out with on Monday. I mean, if he has a specific election date in mind, because my understanding is that he's getting a lot of pushback, primarily from the CTA, saying for the schools, we cannot have a fall election. It's just too much instability.
Yeah. The other thing that struck me about the events, you know, here, you know, and I think that people, there's a lot of cynicism in politics. Everything is well planned, well designed, well choreographed, and it is. But I think when you get people who aren't political animals involved, you get a lot of heartfelt opinions and feelings. And so I'm
real people junk.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I want to get sapped. But, you know, and someone's going to think that I'm taking the side of their budget position. I'm not. But I think that the stories
Is your heart bleeding there, John?
Oh, wait, I can't sorry. Let me wipe this up.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think that a lot of the stories that came forward at the Capitol from around the state and the schools, they're very compelling. But I think it's very hard to get any traction of attention on this issue now. I mean, and the reason I think one reason that it kind of struck me for that is we have been fighting this budget fight now for years. I mean, if you look at since the recessionary problem started, let's say 2008, 2009, we've been fighting this particular budget fight, it feels like, for about 3 years running. And I think at this point, it's very hard to get people to walk back and absorb all of that because they've absorbed all kinds of horror, of bad, tough things that have gone on from these budget cuts. So it didn't. It almost felt like, yeah, we're kind of there already on those things. The other thing I noticed too, and it was just one aside that happened, but it does get to the organizing of these events, is it wasn't just protesting in the rotunda. They were walking the halls trying to talk to legislators. They had their little sheet of photos of legislators out.
Testifying at the Senate.
And yet, I walked out of the assembly chambers on Monday, right behind Connie Conway, the Republican leader, just talked to her with some other reporters. We pass a whole group of teachers in their blue shirts in the hallway looking at their names. They don't recognize her. They don't know who she is. She walks right into her office and closes the door. And I walked out after her believing, she's going to encounter somebody in the hallway. This will be a good exchange to watch. Let's see how this discussion goes. Nobody knew who she was.
Welcome to term limits, John.
Welcome to term limits, but also, too, got a plan before you come up and know who your targets are. Several of the teachers I talked to started rattling off Democrats they talked to. And I said, have you talked to the Republicans yet? Or have you tried? Because the Democrats aren't your problem with what you want.
Right.
The Republicans were. So we'll see. I mean, that's one anecdote. It's obviously not the whole event, but we'll see where that goes. Let's talk about the Republican budget now. Let's go back to that. So everyone will have gotten ample amounts of that by the time you listen to this podcast.
But ample amounts of budget.
Yeah, ample. Yeah, second helpings of budget news. But the general overview, I think, of this budget is it is a one-time solution, really and truly, with exception of revenues they think are coming back. They're betting that the economy is turning back, that the $2.5 billion we got this year will be replicated next year. Some people think maybe even more, but they say they're being conservative. So they're scoring another $2.5 billion of additional revenues next year. They have got the education thing, which we've talked about. They want to cut. They want all the cuts that Governor Brown wanted that the Democrats rejected back in the winter through the conference committee process. They want additional cuts to the state workforce of about $1 billion, which could be a 10% cut in pay, or you could lay off people. That's problematic, obviously politically, but policy-wise too, about those new union contracts. But we'll set that aside for now. They've got a few things in there, like a few hundred million on a waste, fraud, and abuse thing, money that's not being spent right in Medi-Cal. Trying to see if I've hit before I get to the big one.
Eliminate redevelopment and enterprise. Oh, wait, no.
No.
Single sales factor. No.
No. Modify redevelopment according to the idea of the California Redevelopment Association, which supposedly saves $1 billion. I haven't seen an actual scoring of that yet, but I would defer to LAO or someone else.
But not for the budget year. The governor wants to take revenues for $1.7 billion of revenue and offset Medi-Cal cuts.
And the budget, and the Republican budget team gave a range of redevelopment, 1 to 1.7, and with the thing that, well, not all of our caucus agrees on this. And, of course, my comment is, well, Chris Norby from Orange County hates redevelopment. He, of course, is on the governor's plan on that. Anyway, and then I'm leaving this last one here. Take money from the tobacco tax programs, early childhood programs, and take the millionaire's tax money that goes to mental health, redirect it to the budget, which, yes, you've heard of before, which were
Propositions
1D and 1E in the 2009 special election. The voters overwhelmingly said no. I think someone's going to correct me here. Should have looked at it before we came in the studio. I think 1D, the early education one, was the single biggest loser of that package.
Could be.
I think it
was. Because there was a separate campaign.
Yeah, but I think it was the single biggest loser. And this gets to the politics.
Did they win
this.
A big screen TV for that or something?
I don't know.
Biggest initiative loser. I see a new reality
the
show.
Biggest loser.
Yeah.
Except it's a different. Yeah, I like that. The politics of this plan, of one part of this plan, Republicans have spent 4 months arguing strenuously that the voters have spoken on the tax issue, and they spoke in 2009, which begs the question. Didn't the voters also speak on Prop 1D and 1E?
But they were speaking a different language.
They were speaking a different language.
Or a dialect.
I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but I want to play the cut from Connie Conway when I asked her about this off...
Surprise Conway cut.
Off of the Assembly floor on Thursday morning.
A lot of your colleagues on your side of the aisle have said about the governor's plan, voters spoke on those taxes. Voters spoke on Prop 10 and Prop 63, too.
Because they were blended in with the other taxes, I believe. You know, remember the voters voted for Prop 10 and 63 back in the day. When you hook things together, and it's one of the problems we have here, no good deed goes unpunished. So there may be something that, you know, I want to support, but it's always tied with something that I don't. So it is debatable, you know, and we would say, you know, we want to ask people if they'd like to redirect those taxes, and they may say no. Not only do we not want to redirect them, we want them to completely go away, and that's a chance you take.
So as you hear there, I think Ms. Conway clearly doesn't dispute the fact that people are going to say, well, yeah, maybe they have spoken, in which case, what? What do you make of that political grandmaster?
I don't know. Look, you try to do...
It's $2.3 billion, by
the way. You try to derive a scientific, factual conclusion from one event, you know, and you can look at it many different ways. I mean, I don't think there's any consensus.
That was very deep.
Well, I don't think there's any consensus on what happened in 2009 and why. I mean, was it just frustration with the legislature? Was it a referendum on Arnold? Was it they didn't like the taxes? Was it the split within labor?
But that has been the key.
I get it.
But that has been the key
political
argument to why we don't have a special election. Because we know why they're not going to vote for the taxes outright, because they say we're not going to vote for tax increase. We don't believe it's yada, yada, yada. But when you asked, and you and I both asked for months, why not let the voters at least make the decision? If they turn it down, fine. Well, the voters have already spoken.
Right. All right. So politically, it's not. But I mean, at this point.
So do you think I make too much of this? Is that it really undercuts what their narrative has been up to now?
I just don't think that narrative has their narrative has been no up to now. No, we'll talk later. And now it's later. You know, I mean, it's May revise time. We're getting into the traditional budget window. And so, you know, they didn't want to give Brown an early victory, you know, but these things, the budget process evolves, John. We're entering a new phase here. And so while that justification, I'm sure, will still be voiced again, despite the proposal to redirect funds from Prop 10 and Prop 63, I have little doubt that will find its way back into our stories and on our air here in the coming weeks. But you know, whether that's rock solid, ironclad, you know, non-negotiable, we'll find out.
What do you make? I mean, do you hear? I haven't heard a lot, but I had one conversation that does not a theory make, but at least prompts a good chit-chat in a podcast like this, with someone today, a Republican conservative person, not on the other side of the political spectrum, who, you know, again, we're playing the hindsight is 2020 game about what Republicans in the legislature could have done, should have done when presented with this, knowing that the governor was going to go to the tax issue. I mean, the governor laid it out in the campaign. He was going to call a special election. He was going to ask the voters to weigh in.
Right.
And the comment was, why didn't someone stand up to the people on that side of the debate who said an election is tantamount to raising taxes? Stand at them, tell them, can it? Go along with the governor right from the beginning, right from the get-go in January, and say, great, put them up for a vote. If the voters said yes, then say, well, that the voters spoke, and if the voters want to see the ramifications of higher taxes, then we'll be able to say, I told you so. If the voters rejected them, come back to the governor and say, we played it your way, we did everything you wanted to do, now what? They would appear more statesman, they would appear bipartisan. The governor would have had to stick to his basically all cuts philosophy because he'd said no gimmicks. Right. You see where I'm going here?
And yeah.
It would have been a tough strategy to talk back to that faction of conservative politics that said you can't have a special election.
Right.
But it could have been a straight up narrative of saying because we've all seen the polling. Those taxes are a darn hard sell. A damn hard sell.
Whoa.
But they are. I mean, every poll has showed it. They're going to be a tough sell if they ever get to a ballot.
Right. You know, in terms of what they should have done, I mean, look, you had two new leaders in both Republican caucuses. You had a third of each caucus was new. I mean, the new assembly Republicans had never been in office in Sacramento before. And so could they have been more disciplined and better organized? Perhaps. But you know, I think that Brown, if anything, was hoping to capitalize on a little bit of early disarray before some of these positions had hardened and relationships had formed, that he was going to go out, schmooze, wine and dine some of these folks, peel off a few votes and get his way. Could it have been done differently?
Right.
Perhaps. But I'm not sure, given what I saw with the way negotiations actually went down, I'm not sure that the legislative leaders were ready to close within 90 days. I just don't think that
on either side.
Well, no. I mean, the Democrats were going to fall into line behind the governor largely, with mild modifications. That the Republicans were not in a place where, I mean, there were too many things had changed, and frankly, I don't think there was enough leadership to be able to prepare for cutting a quick deal. I mean, you know, these things take a while. I mean, Dutton, I think, took control of the caucus, in September after the budget, right? But this is his first go around with the, and everyone's getting to know a new governor. And I just, you know, I don't know that criticism of, well, they should have had a better plan out of the gate. Okay, fine. But I'm just not sure how realistic it is to expect that.
So
clearly not very, right?
Yeah. So woulda, shoulda, coulda, right? It's a tough game, but kind of made me think for a little bit this morning. I'm over it. I'm done. No thinking. No thinking allowed in this job. So before we wrap up, let's just look ahead to next week and the May revise, the oddest named animal.
Some will say May revision. They will criticize your
revise, grammar. Revise. Anyway. What do you think is worth watching for? I mean, I got a few thoughts in my own head, but what do you think is worth watching for out of it? Rather, given that we don't really know what's in it.
I think a couple of the things. The places where the Republicans dug in their heels, the enterprise zones, the single sales factor, and redevelopment, I think it'd be interesting to see what the governor does there. I mean, clearly the first thing we're all going to be looking at is the revenues. I mean, how much money there actually is. And whether it's $2.5 billion or $2.5 plus $2.5 or $2.5 plus $3.5, anyway, what the new revenue picture is, and if the governor is still calling for an election and how he frames that. And also, I mean, one thing I think tactically we've all been talking about, and it's still unclear to me what the governor's planning on doing, is what level of detail he lays out a scenario where there are no revenues. Will he walk through what we shorthandedly call here the all cuts budget without these revenues. So I think those are the things that just for starters, to be looking for on Monday.
Yeah, I was also going to mention the revenues, and I think I was going to frame it. We're saying the same thing, but I was going to frame it in this way, which is what is the governor's assumption about the revenues? Not only the number, but one time or recurring? This has been if you look at the January budget, governor was pretty conservative in his plan. Do you need
yes.
to take that?
No, I'm good. Right. Okay.
Governor was pretty conservative in his plan when it came to projecting what taxes were going to be. That could be one of the stories of why there's a $2.5 billion quote-unquote windfall or right. unexpected amount of revenue. So how conservative is he in this plan? And then does he see it as a recurring amount of money? The REAPs now have a $2.5 billion number built into the budget year, the coming year. The fiscal year, I should say. What does he have there? What is his out
and
year?
And how he frames it, too.
Yeah, but what's his out year look there, too? How far into the right. future can we go to see where he is? Because one of the things when you look at this argument about that the REAPs have put forward a one-time deal is that they don't think the governor's is a long-term structural fix, but the governor's backers will say at least they think it penciled out for 5 years. Match to the tax plan.
Right.
So I'm very curious about revenues. I want to see, is he stay where he is on redevelopment? Because we haven't heard about a lot of redevelopment from the governor's end for a while.
I've got $10 on no. No. Well, I don't know.
You'll put a no that he doesn't stay where he is?
I don't know. And again, I mean, where is he actually and where does he position himself okay. as these negotiations begin? I don't know. His redevelopment proposal, my guess is whatever is done on redevelopment will not mirror exactly the governor's plan.
Sure, sure. I agree with you about what's his plan B. How specific is that and what mm-hmm. does that plan B look like? How much is it crafted off what other people have suggested that'll be? Because we've had this long buildup over what an all-cuts budget would look like that was based on an advice letter from the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office.
Right.
If you look at the documents that Connie Conway provided to reporters on Wednesday, where she got an advice letter from the LAO, she got different advice. And it's not to say that the LAO is all over the place on their advice. It depends on how you frame the question and what the question's asked about what it is you're trying to protect, what it is you're trying to do. So does the governor come up with his own scenario?
Right.
I mean, you know, about cuts here, cuts there.
I think politically, too, how the Brown administration frames these revenue. I mean, look, you and I have had the same conversations with Brown's fiscal staff about all the changes that have been made in the way the state collects revenues and that it's made the job of forecasting, of economic forecasting, very, very difficult. I mean, the LAO is saying, hey, you know, revenue estimates have to be plus or minus $4 to $5 billion because we just yeah. don't know how the money flows in.
Yeah.
And so is that real or are they going to be accused of intentionally trying to downplay the good news to try to sell a tax package sometime later this year or next year? You know, that's something that we will all seize on, I'm sure.
And the only other thing I was going to mention I'm going to look for is to see what substantial changes to the January budget there are that go to the narrative of one-time fixes, gimmicks, smoke and mirrors. Because I still believe through this whole process, I can't get inside the governor's head, but I still feel like that his pledge on gimmickry in budgeting is at the heart of why he ran for governor. It's at the heart of the campaign. It's at the heart of everything, his experience at being governor, at doing things the right way. And so I want to see how that matches up to that. I mean, is he still, you know, or are there a few things he's acknowledging he has to do?
Yeah. He set the bar very high for himself. And the easiest way for all of us in the media to tear somebody down, which we all love to do, right, is focus on the hypocrisy
we're equal opportunity.
Or the education. And you know, I mean, this was a huge part of the narrative of Schwarzenegger. And whether it's reneging on a pledge about gimmickry or reneging on a pledge about an election, if there is any reneging going on, you can count on reading a lot about it and hearing a lot about it on public radio.
Indeed. And, you know, I just realized I didn't mention the Tinkerbell reference.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, State Treasurer Bill Lockyer put out a reaction to the Republican budget that he said it was, I'm going to have to paraphrase him here. It was something about that it was as believable as Tinkerbell. Does that seem like I'm right? I'm calling it up here on the iPhone while I'm talking. Oh, I see.
Can we tape over this now?
No. The folks who offer this plan pretend our long-term budget plan doesn't exist. our long-term budget problem. Or maybe they think Tinkerbell will fly in and make the shortfalls vanish with pixie dust. Anyway, I got picked up a lot of places, Tinkerbell and pixie dust. And so I like the tease with taxes and now.
Tinkerbell.
Now it feels, when my daughter watches Tinkerbell a lot, so maybe it just stuck with me. But anyway, we will.
Stay tuned next week for a Finding Nemo reference.
See if I can weave that in. We will fly out of the studio now and.
To Never Never Land.
Good ending. That's Anthony York from the LA Times. I'm John Myers, brain faded from KQED. We'll see you next time.